Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 345 of the podcast. That's 345. I don't know if you know this, but that's sequential numbers. So that must mean something mystical. I hope you enjoy this episode with Rebecca. I am fast and furious programming, not related to the film franchise, programming SF Sketchfest. Lots of great Max Fun people headed our way. I don't want to give too much away, but I'm very excited about where we are headed with this year's roster. And I hope to see some of you there. We're going to announce in November, so I'll give you more details on Sketchfest as they develop, I said, like a newscaster. And I hope everybody is doing just great. This, our friendship is going to be built 100% being recorded.
Okay.
Nothing in my life. You're good. You would just have to hold it like this. I know it's a little bit like Celine Dion-ish at the beginning, but you can also like lie back. You can move around. You don't have to put those muffs on.
Right.
I think they might be called something different. Not probably not muffs.
Headphones.
Cans. You don't have to put those cans on. In everything I'm saying sounds dirty all of a sudden. Like everything sounds like... Have you had that conversation like on sets where every shot that like a dude is describing, whether it's the DP or like a grip or something, suddenly you're like, oh, these were all named by guys.
Yeah.
And also they all feel dirty. Like what's happening?
I mean, my dad has a hardware store and all of the hardware is really sexual, like a nipple and a screw. Like those are actual hardware terms.
True.
I'm not making that up. It's like,
yeah.
Cool, guys.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Which begs the question, I guess, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, I guess the tools came first, and then men who worked with tools were like, hey, you know what drilling this reminds me of? Drilling a lady, am I right, everybody? I don't know. This is like some sort of effect I'm going for where I pull the mic away and then put it back. Anyway, so your dad has a hardware store.
He does.
We'll get right into your biography,
right,
vis-a-vis gross words, in New York.
In New York, in Long Island.
Okay.
Yeah, my dad's the master of dirty jokes, and he uses his hardware references.
So. Is he really?
Yeah.
He's like a pun. Is he a dirty punster?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. My dad's a punster, too. I don't know how dirty he is, but then every once in a while, he would pull a dirty one when I was little, and it would definitely be
gross.
Like, ew, Dad,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We're not there yet. We're not friends.
Right.
You're still my dad. Yeah. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do have a younger brother, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Johnny.
Yeah.
Johnny, could you come in here, please? This
Johnny,
is a very, very
Johnny,
sudden surprise, but we did bring him in just for this. He still goes by Johnny. How much younger is he? I like that. I like when older guys go by Johnny. Sorry,
yeah.
Johnny Depp. I know that's not a popular.
He's not older. He's 24.
Yeah.
He's still. But yeah, he's living in New York. He's a music producer.
Right on.
He's in the music world. And
nice.
My parents were really disappointed when both of us came out as artists. Like,
that
oh,
was
great.
My next question. I was like, either it's going to be a thing because your parents were, or it's going to be possibly the exact opposite.
Well, my dad's a, you know,
practical
German man.
Yeah.
And his two kids are not practical and feel a lot and express, and he doesn't really get it, but, you know.
Do you feel like still waters run deep with him? Do you feel like some of the kind of emotional stuff that you access is like something that he experiences deep down?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think everyone does.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that's probably
But
fair.
I mean, I love mine, so I let them come out all the time.
Right? What's your mom like? Is she more emotive?
Yeah. My mom's Colombian and very emotive. Just always, you know, the crying and the laughing and the drama and like very Latin mom kind of thing. Like she always tells me that she loves me with the blood of her heart.
Aww.
You know.
So that's a real opposites attract kind of scenario for them.
Mm-hmm.
Where do they meet? Do they meet here?
They met in New York.
Nice.
Yeah.
I guess in the
they
States.
They both emigrated from their respective countries and somehow found each other, and the rest is history.
The rest is history, but I'm digging into it right now. prying up the old boards of the past, tweaking the nipples of history. I mean...
Love that.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sure tweaking the nipples of history is going to be sweeping the nation
as soon as this podcast episode drops.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So did you... So you were like a kid who immediately gravitated towards the arts and stuff when you were young?
Not really. I didn't start acting till I was 20. Before that, I was working in the music world. I was... I ran my own record label called Jet Boy Records. I managed bands.
Right.
Yeah, I was doing all sorts of things in that world for a while. Before that, I wasn't, I mean, well, I guess actually, you know what? I'm going to take back what I said. Yes, I've always been in the arts. I wanted to be a ballet dancer. So from 3 to 17, I was fully serious dancing, you know, 6 days a week.
Woof.
Crazy. Then my tits grew and my body was not correct.
That happens. I mean, God, what do you think the percentage is? I won't hold you to these numbers because I didn't tell you to prepare in advance any stats. But what is the percentage of young women who can get to a certain point in ballet and then experience puberty from such a range, right? You can start experiencing at 12, you can start experiencing it at 18. But like, how many girls do you think sort of drop off because of like, oh, my body changed and now I don't feel I can do this, or I'm told I can't
like
do this?
I'm going to say like 90%, right? 95%. I mean, it's a hard world. Even if your body is the right body type and you can do the splits and all this stuff, it really is a very uniform kind of world. And in order to dance in a professional company, you really have to fit into a certain kind of look.
Yeah.
You know,
did you experience that competitive side, or did you have more of an experience of like, oh, this is joyful, until it wasn't?
Yeah, that was it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't competing with anyone when I was doing it. I just purely loved it. I needed to express, and that was my outlet. Because I was so scared of speaking out loud in crowds. Any audience looking at me, I could never speak. Somehow, weirdly, I got myself into acting. But up until that point, dance was my way of doing that. So yeah. I loved it.
I wonder if, I don't know why I'm so obsessed with like what came first. But I almost wonder if, because you said you started so young at 3, you so quickly associated your creative output or your way of expressing yourself to groups as something silent, that like as you were aging up, there might have been part of you that was like, this is the way I understand it. And it almost like, you know what I mean? It like fed into being like, I feel like comfortable expressing physically, but I've been doing that so long. Maybe, you know, when other kids who wouldn't have done anything like that would be like, oh, I guess I'll just start talking because I've expressed myself no other way.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I was also scared. I was like a very shy. I was bullied when I was a kid. I mean, like definitely the ballet has a factor into that, but then also just my existence in the world was I wanted to like hide under a table and not talk to anyone. Dancing was my way. But yeah, I mean, I think it definitely has a big, I never thought about it that way, you know?
That's my goal.
Yeah.
To just blow everyone's mind.
Great.
Possible. Just to tweak the nipples of history.
Tweak the nipples of history.
Oh, look, Rebecca, this is not a reflection of you being lame or boring in any way. I'm trying to find the right way to podcast because I have like this neck problem that has been developing.
Oh no.
From me flipping off my bike and landing on my back many years ago and being like, listen, I love cycling. Like, I can handle some bruises and cuts and like a broken thing or two. And then you find out like 5 years later, you're like, oh, so that herniated these discs and I didn't know.
Is there no way to fix that? I don't really know what a herniated disc really is.
Surgery? I didn't either. You can get surgery. I'm really hoping not to. And this isn't about me. But anyway, point being that like there's certain positions where you're like, oh, that should be comfortable. And then you're like, no, for some reason that's not comfortable. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of like experimentation. I'm not going full lie down on the bed with you. I don't want to put you through that yet.
I don't mind.
I don't want to put you through that beautiful seduction. But anyway, so that's what this is that's going on.
Of course, do exactly what you need to.
Speaking of injuries, ballet can be very tough on the body.
Oh yeah, my feet are disgusting. I mean,
that's what every former ballerina says.
Yeah, I have like weird corns,
knobby,
and calluses, knobs. I mean, knobs.
God damn it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, every time I date a new person, I'm like, yeah,
there's
going to
come a time.
Yeah, they're going to see my feet and they're gnarly, but whatever. What are you going to do?
You know what? Some guys are super, by the way, some women. Actually, you know what? I haven't had many conversations with women about, like, I don't know that many female foot fetishists, but I'm sure that exists.
I'm sure it is. It's not really, it's not my fetish.
Yeah.
So
I'm trying to think if I guess I've noticed, like, women that I've been interested in or women that I've had relationships with, I've looked and had an opinion about their feet. But it wasn't like, do you know what I mean? It definitely wasn't like, this is a do or die moment right now. I'm about to see her take off her shoes. And I certainly pay no attention to men's
feet.
Never
thought about that either. There might be a do or die kind of situation for some who have that fetish. Like, am I going to go through this or no?
Yeah.
And are we going to date or not? I mean,
that's the whole question too. That brings up the whole question of like,
that's sort of, I think, a bigger conversation now, just because of kind of where we are with acknowledging all these sort of unconscious, you know, unconscious racism or unconscious biases that even people who don't want, who don't feel that they have those, and in that way kind of don't, in the same way that you would if you were like, I know I don't like Asian people or whatever. But there are these kind of unconscious, like you tend towards this or you lean towards that. Maybe it's because of what you were raised with. But even something like that is like, you know, you hear that. I'm thinking about this because I had recently listened to an old podcast episode of someone's, I can't remember who, but it was a young woman who was like, I am an Asian woman and I've only dated white guys. And I decided to exclusively date Asian men for a year because it was bothering me that I didn't seem to be attracted to men of my own race.
Did that help? I mean, what did she learn from that experience? Because I feel like you can't force. Yeah.
Well, that's the conversation,
like,
right?
It's like it goes down to even like, you know, it's like a pheromones kind of like animal thing. You know, if I've experienced in the past, if I've dated someone or like gone on a date with someone or a couple dates and like I get close enough to them physically where I like can get a whiff of them and I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
But like, it's not like they don't, it's not like they're cologne. It's like, they're, it's like you know, I feel like it's just, it goes beyond that. If I were to force myself to only date like Colombian men, which by the way, I don't like, I don't want to date Colombian men. I don't like, the cultural possessive masculine.
Yeah, that's there's some tricky stuff that goes on. With,
I'm not going to write it off.
Yeah,
but,
cultures.
You know, you can't ignore the nature.
Yeah. No, no. I mean, that's it. It's like the nature versus nurture, like versus, yeah, are you trying to convince yourself of something? I mean, imagine if like you, this person was completely apeshit about a woman and you know, then it came the moment of truth because they were a foot fetishist and they were like, I'm so attracted to her in every other way. And like, and then she takes her shoes off and they're like, oh, like, well, this is a do or die for me. This is such an important part of my sexuality that I cannot, I don't think I'll ever be able to be fully satisfied with this person. Like, is that their fault? Is it?
Well, maybe, you know, you could work together at first, try and make that, you know,
someone could get their feet replaced and get a foot donation.
Yes.
From someone else.
Yeah.
Swip swap. Yeah.
That's fine.
I'm sure we're around the corner from that.
That's so weird.
I'm sure people will be getting new everything.
I'd like some new legs. Just a little taller, you know, just be a little taller.
Listen, there's ups and downs.
I love
both.
Heels, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Listen, I put a heels on, I'm like 6'3". That's a big commitment.
And I put heels like on and I'm just 5 feet. No, I'm just kidding. I'm like 5'5" or 5'6".
I don't even feel like, is that, I guess that's small. I don't even know anymore what's.
I don't really care.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Gives me a wide range of opportunity, you know, the dating world because I'm shorter. I mean,
And the working world.
Yes.
Because it's still a culture in which like people still, if they're especially creating a straight relationship, like, most often there's this unconscious bias, there we go, of like, okay, let's make sure the guy is taller than the girl.
Well, I don't want to, I'm pretty short as it is. I don't want to date someone shorter than I am. You know, I'm almost 5'4".
Understood. Yeah. Who did you find yourself being attracted to? Like when you kind of hit puberty and were a teen?
Bad boys, skater boys, public school boys, all the boys.
Did you go to private school?
Yeah, I did. All the things my parents were so like not into.
yeah.
Yeah, I think that.
Do you feel like that was part of it?
That definitely was part of it. I was like, yeah. it worked because they were always nervous and pissed.
So you achieved it. You both got to be attracted to a certain type of person and make your parents nervous.
Yeah.
So there was a real sense from you early on of like, fuck
rebellion.
This, I'm rebelling. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. From an early age.
Which wouldn't necessarily go hand in hand with someone's expectations of like ballet and sort of that.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I was a ballet dancer, but then I was like outside of class, I was wearing like studded belts and wore black makeup. And
that's
like
pretty hot. That combo was actually quite.
I don't know. I loved to be, you know, I wanted to be thought of as a bad girl. And I was. A lot of parents weren't super down with their children hanging out with me. Not that I was doing anything actually bad. I never got in trouble with the law. I never did drugs. I never like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So yeah, what was the?
I don't know.
Studs.
Because I think I was so. I think it came from a place of like me always feeling like I didn't fit, and I was bullied for so long, and I only ever had one friend growing up, and then the second I hit puberty, and like, yeah, I had my tits grew, and like, oh my god, my body. And I had all these kids that I used to remember, like, looking at me and, well, not looking at me and not acknowledging me. All of a sudden, I was like, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to be so fucking cool. You're going to be intimidated by me. Watch.
Yeah.
Worked.
Which, that's also a hard thing to do internally. It's hard for many of us to, like, get that defiance.
Yeah.
Rather than just shrink further in, you know, to have that turning point where you're like, you know what, I'm done being the victim, or I'm done, you know?
And I felt empowered. I finally found my power. I'm proud of my younger self.
There you go.
When I was a child.
That's
and a I big figured deal. It out.
That's a really big deal. Why, I mean, I say this as somebody who was bullied and I don't really know why I was bullied, but do you know, like, do you know kind of why was it?
I was really quiet and I was very, like, if anyone ever said that I did something wrong, I just immediately believed them without actually thinking about why or... I don't know. I would shrink into myself so easily. I think I was just an easy target.
Yeah.
You know, and I was always so welcoming and giving, and I would invite the entire class to my birthdays. I was always inclusive, and then all of a sudden... I just think that because of that and the fact that I was just so easy to bully.
You were target. Yeah.
It was just, you know.
Which sucks because everything you've described is like, well, that seems like a nice human being. Let's punish her.
Yeah.
Let's punish her. What, so you said you went to private school?
Yeah.
Was it co-ed or was it?
Co-ed. I went to public school and then I went to private school starting middle school.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that? Was that a conversation that was like, all right, we're pulling you out. We're going to give you something more. Or did you want to do that?
Oh, I totally wanted to.
Okay.
I was super excited. I've always been excited to learn and go to, you know, schools. I love school.
Again, here's the bad girl talking that parents were like not a fan of the girl who also loves school.
I know, right? It's very contradictory. So strange. But yeah, no, I was actually super excited. The school that I went to was they would take children, all the students on trips, you know, around the world. And I really wanted to do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So when I was there, I went to Morocco and I worked at an orphanage. I went to Portugal. Oh, no. Well, that was a different school. I went to I went to Greece. I went to Italy. Yeah, I mean, we did some cool traveling.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. How big were the classes who were traveling together? Would it be like a whole year?
It'd be like, they'd actually combine classes.
Okay.
Because you'd get to like, you know, put on a list of, you know, top three and then hopefully you get into your top.
I gotcha.
But it'd be all different grades, you know, kind of mixed in. So like maybe a group of 15 or 20 would go to, you know, Morocco and then the other. But it wasn't a very big school, so it worked out.
Yeah. Was there a sense of like, we're getting away with something when you sort of have a chaperone? You don't have one adult per every kid and it's definitely not your parents. Is there like, in addition
sort
to
of.
What's magical about it, is there also like a, oh my God, like my pulse is racing. Like I'm fucking like I'm traveling right now with just a bunch of people that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I loved it. And we always had so many things to do. I mean, the trips that I chose were always very scheduled. Because, you know, when we were working, you know, at an orphanage in Morocco, like, first of all, you know, being a young woman in a country, you know, a Muslim country is, you know, it's not conducive to like a bunch of teens wanting to sneak out and party.
Fair.
You know,
good point.
Like we had to cover ourselves and wear long skirts. And I mean, we had to get up every morning and we had a lot of stuff to do. And it was a very emotionally taxing trip, that one.
It sounds like it would be.
Yeah, it was.
How did
beautiful.
You do? What do you feel like? I mean, I assume that you felt like you had a much closer understanding of what it would be like to be from that culture.
Heartbreaking. I mean, also.
So it wasn't like, you know what? I get it. Like, I get it. I would. Sure. I'll cover everything. And.
Oh, no. I mean, I did for my own, you know, safety and stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean. I don't love it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's tricky, huh? It's tricky.
Yeah. And I like part of me as a person and who I am now as a woman, part of who I am and how I express myself is my clothing, is like how I feel when I walk into a room, knowing that like what I put on makes me feel like a badass, because that's how I learned, you know, from being bullied into, you know, turning into like punk girl. It gave me, you know, kind of like an armor that I needed. And I mean, it's not an armor now, but it's more like, oh, I feel really good in my skin and I love to express myself with clothes and with stuff.
God, you know what? I can't believe, speaking of like, I hadn't thought of it that way before. It seems crazy to me that like I could look at something like a like punk style from the outside and understand the idea of armor. And yet that's totally like something, a phase that I went through that part of me still feels like when I see cops, I still feel like I'm that kid. Like I still feel that embeds so hard to where like you, when you get looked at by enough cops when you're a teenager, that you're like forevermore. Now look at me. I'm dressed like a kindergarten teacher. And still, if I see a cop, I'm like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck.
Right.
But for some reason for me, I didn't like really think about that until right now. Like, oh, that was part of like when you choose like sort of a goth or like a punk or some combination of clothing, of course it makes you feel stronger in some way. And that absolutely is true for me. And I forgot about that part. Mm-hmm. For me, it was just like, oh, style. Oh, cool. Oh, edgy. Like the music and all that. I'm like, oh, wait, no, I remember like putting on a studded bracelet or whatever and being like, yeah, I'm fucking cool. What?
Yeah. I mean, it started out as an armor for me because I wanted to rebel. And now it's not, you know, now I'm just like, well, I love to express myself this way because I may not have a conversation with people at this party, but at least I look fucking badass.
Maybe it'll become and that's part of it, too, is like when you're younger, there can be a sense, not always, but there can be a sense of like, how do you know who you're going to want to talk to, or how do you know what kind of person you're going to attract to you?
Right.
As well.
So far, so good. I mean, yeah, I've met a lot of weirdos since moving to LA. I think that's kind of like the lay of the land here. A lot
How
of
long
weirdos.
Have you been here?
I moved here in March.
Oh, gosh, you really have just gone here.
Yeah, I mean, and I was in New York for a bit of the summer. So, like, I've been back and forth.
And there's no freaks in New York. Just kidding.
Oh, my God. But there are. But I feel like all the freaks
totally
in New York are
scene.
My friends.
Right.
But here it's a different kind of, you know, I definitely made some, you know, weirdo friends at first. And now I've kind of like settled into, okay, I know, like, you know, I'm getting better at it, you know?
Yeah.
It's all right.
That's to be expected, I think, too, is you kind of like, again, like you said, getting the lay of the land.
Right.
It's pretty extraordinary that like the two cities in the United States who produce the most, arguably the most art, or at least the most consumed by everyone else in the United States, right? That they produce the most art are so wildly different in so many ways from one another.
Definitely.
You know? Mm-hmm. What did you decide to come here because it just felt like, you know, more work was cropping up here, or were you ready for a change, or both?
I was ready for a change. I mean, I'd been in New York my entire life.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kind of see what it would be like, you know, auditioning here, meeting different people. And I wanted to meet the producers. I wanted to be around this is the, you know, main place for acting and film in general.
Yeah.
And I was curious, and here I am, and I'm going to try it out.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
It's a podcast that we do as we are married. And how's the ad going so far? Because I think it's going very good.
We talk about things we like every week on Wednesdays.
One time Rachel talked about pumpernickel bread. It was so tight. You cannot afford to miss her talking about this sweet brown bread.
We also talk about music and poems and, you know, weather.
There was one...
Weather?
One time Rachel talked about Baby Beluga, the song, for like 14 minutes. And it just really blew my hair back.
So check us out on MaximumFun.org.
It's a cool podcast with chill vibes. Amber is the color of our energy, is what all the iTunes reviews say.
They will now.
And you were coming off of Orange, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And that shot in New York. Yes,
it
correct.
It did.
Beth Dover, a dear friend.
Oh, really?
Probably you had some interactions
with Beth.
You love Beth
Dover? Yeah. Oh, my God, I love Beth. I just had lunch with her like a week ago, and I was like, Beth, let's go to a sex shop.
Yeah.
So we like went to a sex shop and like, you know, had fucking blasts. It was so funny.
That's awesome.
I love her. Yeah. I'm going to be seeing her, I don't know, in like a week, or we have a date.
You give her a big kiss for me.
I will.
Love our Beth Dover. What was I going to say? I got distracted by thinking of you guys at a sex shop.
We were like checking out nipple clamps and stuff.
Sure. And then you went to a hardware store. Same thing. You know what I was going to ask is, because you were kind of talking about the feeling of speaking in front of groups, and now it seems that you are choosing more. Obviously, when we're on camera, we are speaking to a group, but it's not the same as like doing a play on Broadway. Like, did you go through that phase, or do you still have an interest
in
that?
I mean, I've done some musicals, and I did some, you know, small off Broadway theater when I was starting out, and it just, you know, kind of just stayed. I kind of just geared more towards the film and TV world But I love film. I mean, I love, you know, live theater. I'm down for it. I definitely would love to do it at some point again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a whole, just a whole different schedule.
It is. It's very intense. It's kind of intimidating.
Discipline,
to me.
Right?
Oy, it's intimidating. Yoy. I saw Burn This on Broadway with Kerry Russell and Adam Driver.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I mean, the performance is so taxing and so like, there's so much energy that went into that. And the fact that they're doing it every single night and then sometimes twice in a day, I mean, that is unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But hey, I'm down to try.
You're down to try.
Yeah.
What roles are you attracted to a certain kind of thing? Like when you started getting into theater stuff, was that high school or just, no, you said 20.
No, yeah.
College or non-college.
Well, yeah, I went
taking the place of college.
Right. Yeah. I guess, that was like just early New York, like 20, 21, 22. When I was just trying to build a resume and kind of like get more experience because I jumped in. I left the music world and I was like, I'm going to act and I've never done it before. I just wanted to get as much experience as possible. So I was just doing anything I could get my hands on, anyone who would cast me really.
Mm-hmm. And did the music part, where did that come from? How did you end up? Because you were fairly young, right? When you started kind of really interacting with bands.
I started interning for Bada Bing Records when I was 16. The band Beirut was on the label at the time. My best friends from Long Island, we were all really big music nerds. And my mom would take us on Tuesday nights or Wednesday nights to like rock and roll shows in New York City, pay the bouncer to get us in because we're underage. And we'd all have fun. And then she'd drive us back home. And that's what we did like during the week sometimes.
Yeah.
And we all just kind of were really into the indie music scene. And yeah, I mean, that was my favorite thing. I loved being a part of it. I kind of always dreamed about being in a band, but never really actually tried to. And I loved the idea of like managing and like putting stuff together because I'm very type A. I mean, I love spreadsheets.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of like this natural thing that happened. It just worked.
That's so great.
Yeah. So I got my first job at Bada Bing because I got a ticket to their show, Beirut, and it was 21 plus and I couldn't get in and there was no way I was going to get in. So I started crying. And this was really way before the doors even opened. And this guy came up to me. He's like, what's up? And I was like, I want to go to Beirut. And he was like, okay, wipe your tears. Shut the fuck up. Come behind me. You're going to work the merch table, but just don't fuck it up. And I was like, okay. So I went inside, worked the merch table, sold every fucking piece of merch because I wanted to make an impression.
Yes.
And I was like, this is my moment. So I met the owner of Bada Bing Records. He was the guy who brought me in was this guy, Hunter, who was working for the record label. And then I met the owner, Ben, of Bada Bing. And I was like, hey, I want a job. And then it worked out. I think I started like 2 weeks, 3 weeks later.
This is like the most boring question of all time, but do you feel like that would have happened in some other way? Like you were going to work in music,
whether
or not you had been seen by this nice guy who like took pity on you and had you sell merch, you know?
I think
that's kind of a great moment.
It was such a it was such an important part of, you know, my life, and I always wanted to. It just that happened to be that one moment where it could work. I mean, I was going to figure it out anyway. I mean, I'm the queen of internships. I have done so many, and I ended up, you know, working for so many different amazing artists and record labels, and I got so much experience, and I like forever. I think it would have always happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very ingrained in me and who I am now too, because music plays such a big part in how I prepare for roles sometimes, and you know what I listen to before I go into an audition, or what I listen to like, you know, get hyped up or to feel whatever X, Y, and Z things.
Yeah, is that something? I mean, for so many of us at that kind of critical age when our hormones are exploding and we're sort of trying to figure it all out, that music becomes like just deeply, deeply important in such an emotional way. And some people, not so much. Some people are like, I listen to whatever was on the radio,
exactly.
Or like, I only
that
like musicals.
I cannot stand radio music. It literally makes me sick to my stomach when it sounds like a fast food song that was written in a studio in like 2 minutes.
Right.
And I'm like, ugh. It gives me anxiety because there's no change in the fucking chord progress. It's just boring.
Yeah.
It's still, yeah. Hey, if I need to be pissed off for a role, I'll just put on some Top 40.
Yeah.
Sorry, not sorry.
I don't disagree. There's just a lot that I don't. And things have become so specialized now that you there are like artists that I don't even know what they sound like because I'm not in a situation like, I feel like the places where you really hear that stuff are like somewhat like a gym or like, do you know what I mean? Where are you that
in
you're hearing top 40, you know, maybe in like a grocery store or a store. I don't know. But there's so much that like you just don't get exposed to because people just don't aren't you're just not driving with a radio on anymore. At least many people aren't.
I do actually.
Oh, do you?
But I have like the satellite radio so I can like go to like, you know, my favorite is the Underground Garage, Channel 21. For anyone who's interested, I love that. And like there's Classic Vinyl on there and Classic Rewind. I love those.
Well, yeah, but that's like you said, you're sort of you might discover something new, but you're not like subjected to the radio by someone else who's just like, hey, we're listening to Top 40 all day.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, sometimes if I'm driving in cars with friends, you know, some of them have horrible taste in music and will play just shit that I just have to, it's a test in my patience and my anxiety. Like, keep it down, Rebecca. It's all good. It's just a fucking song.
Yeah. What drew you to, do you feel like you were drawn? This is, again, like a question that if someone asked me, I'd be like, I can't answer that. There's no choice here. But some people are drawn to like very articulated lyrics. Some people are more drawn to sort of the overall. It's like, are you listening to Sigur Rós? You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't say you're listening
sometimes
to that, but because almost the music itself is like lyrics and an emotion versus like, you know, a band that is all like you really sort of break down. Like for me, Frightened Rabbit, and I'm like, oh God, he's, you know, this is poetry set to music that I also happen to love, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, it really just depends on my mood, but sometimes it really is the lyrics that get me, and sometimes it's a mixture of both, and sometimes it's just the fact that it's bratty and loud and makes me feel like a punk girl again, and yeah, it just depends on what I'm feeling, you know, and I go through phases. There are some bands that I'll listen to so much that I, you know, I can't listen to them again for like months.
When you listen to something so intensively for like just like you're digesting it and living and breathing it, isn't it so crazy when you come back years later and you like a smell,
it's
just like
weird.
Immediately, like there's, I was listening to a band the other day, I think it was like Phoenix or something, where I was like, oh, I haven't listened to this album in a long time. And I listened to it and I couldn't necessarily even place what was going on in my life when I was listening to it all the time. But just a feeling came back that was so specific, that was so clearly part of like whatever I was dealing with then.
And it's beautiful how music can incite feeling like that. I think that's why for me it goes so hand in hand with acting. Because I have all these playlists and, you know, they're used for different things because some songs bring me back to when I'm 14 years old and, you know, I'm experiencing the heartbreak of puppy love. And I remember that place because of this particular playlist, you know, and it's beautiful.
Were you going back to that for a second? When you talked about being attracted to Bad Boys, were they like kind of a version of you, which is to say
probably
you were actually like a good person,
kindred
that sort
spirits
of had that armor,
right,
rather than like the guy who's like, oh, he was an absolute dick and like he shattered me.
Oh yeah. I mean, definitely in my younger years it was like, oh wow, we're just kindred spirits, we just like, you know, we are into the same things. I mean, I, you know, later in life, in my, you know, my 20s, my early 20s, I did date a couple, you know, actual bad boys that shattered my heart. But, you know, I'm grateful for those moments because they shaped who I am and made me stronger.
100%.
So, yeah.
That's a real thing.
Yeah.
Turns out that's a real thing. It did is. You have people who were into you that you were like, like you're not bad enough?
Yeah. I mean, it's not even just bad. I think the word bad is not exactly the right one. I'm more like, you know, if you're not interesting to me, I mean, this just, it's I need a lot more than just like, you can't just be a pretty boy. If I get bored, if we can't go to, you know, a concert together and like be wild and dance, and I am a very energetic, wild kind of person, and I need someone who can match me there and like, you know, independent and creative, and it takes a lot more than just being pretty or looking a certain way. It's like I really have to feel like we connect on a mind, spiritual, you know, way.
Sure,
I guess.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. When you were being thought of by other people's parents as potentially a bad influence, was that you were talking about how your mom would take you guys to see shows and stuff. Was it like that your parents sort of knew who you really were and they were like, that's not how we see you. Like, we know that you like the stuff and you're dressed like this and you're trying to shock us or whatever.
They were just supportive. I mean, at the end of the day, I still had my, you know, really good grades and I wasn't actually doing anything actually bad.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't always understand me, but they did support me. And my parents have always been the best because they were the parents like that would, you know, take all my friends to concerts, crazy things like that. Like they were just such awesome parents in a weird time. Hormonal teenage years.
Yeah, it's a weird time. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
Don't miss it. I do not ever want to experience high school again.
Also, do not. Well, I miss, I guess, you know, I don't know. I love talking about it, but I wouldn't go back. That's for sure.
Yeah, hell no.
Because you were sort of talking earlier about people that your parents would find out that you were interested in or find out that you were dating. Were any of those people, were they just doing the same thing that other people's parents were doing with you where they were concerned that you were dating a guy who was then going to like get you addicted to heroin?
Oh, well, but I never was that extreme. You know, like I wasn't hanging out with anyone who was doing any heroin or anything like that. it's not that they were not down with some of the guys. It was more like they had an idea about who they wanted me to be with and how they wanted me to look. And my parents are immigrants from countries, you know, they didn't go to college, like the traditional kind of college thing. They didn't do the American, you know, they are living the American dream. Like they both came from poverty. They came to this country. They did not want a daughter to like, you know, be this rebellious like girl, like listening to loud, you know, rock and roll. They wanted me to be more demure and like, you know, study, you know, whatever, something very, you know, they wanted me to be pretty normal, you know, and they wanted me to just dress pretty normal and marry a nice guy and kind of just be chill. And I've never been chill.
Yeah. Is your brother
not chill?
You said that he became a producer.
Yeah.
Did he sort of do the same thing where they were like, here we go again?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Johnny's one of my best friends. He is my best friend of all friends. But, I mean, I think together, I think I had a big part in shaping his early years because I was kind of finding my way. And then all of a sudden Johnny was like, you know, oh, I want to listen to the Hives and I want to go to the Vines concert with you and whatever. But I mean, he's also naturally a rebel and together they were just like, oh, all right, well,
we're going to have to reshape our expectations.
What are you going to do?
Because like you said, they wanted to support you. It's not like they were like,
yeah,
you don't fit in this rigid thing, therefore you're dead to us. Like,
no,
obviously they were.
No, but it did take fighting. I mean, they weren't really down because they are coming from a place of like, they want to assimilate into this culture and they want their children to have an existence that is different than what they experienced.
Yeah.
And believe me, it has been, mom and dad. I mean,
yeah.
Been real different.
I'm sure when you started showing up on television, they were like, this is officially extremely different than anything.
But they're down with that.
Yeah.
They're really psyched.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
cool,
I was gonna say,
my daughter's,
you want to talk
that.
About the American dream, it's not the worst thing for people to be like, and now she's, you know,
exactly
on TV. Yeah, so there is that. You mentioned that you just had one friend kind of growing up when you were really young. Are you still friends with
that person? We just reconnected recently.
Oh, nice.
Devin. Yeah, I'm so excited about it. We were inseparable, but she was a weird girl and like we were really into spooky movies and we'd make our own homemade spooky movies and, you know, like cut off the heads of Barbie dolls and nail them to trees outside her house and stuff. She was always just like this really kind of creative and cool weird girl and so was I and we were inseparable. And then my, you know, puberty hit and I wanted to like branch out and she did, you know, it was this hard kind of like, it felt like a breakup in
absolutely.
A way.
Absolutely.
And it was
so painful.
Yeah. And we both went through this like really painful time, but recently, like in the last year, we've reconnected and I've been like, I've hung out with her in New York a few times and we still get along so well. She's actually in film now, too.
Oh, nice.
I know. She does a lot of voiceover work, too. And so we reconnected. And, right before I left for L.A., she and I got really drunk at my apartment in New York, drank, like, a ton of wine and listened to The Stones. And I was like, wow, when I was 3 years old, I knew what's up, because now this long has has passed, and we get together as women and we still get along.
Yeah.
Like, she's so cool. So I'm excited to have that, you know, relationship back in my life.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It is funny that you guys had little parallel. Isn't it funny how the language of what's spooky, like, is so consistent? Like, it feels like at some point we all arrived at the fact that cutting a head off a doll was like, you know what I'm saying? And I don't mean that in a shitty way. I genuinely mean, like, there's just certain things that we continue as American culture, but also, like, you sort of see it when you know, there's different versions of that. The Japanese have a different kind of version of that, but which we still find scary. It's not like their version of scary. We're like, adorable. Like, that's not scary at all. That woman crawling across the ceiling with her, like, hair matted in front of her face.
Yeah.
But
oh, man, I love spooky stuff.
You know?
Yeah.
But I just love, if you said to someone, oh, you know, we were the kind of girls who like to cut the heads off of Barbie dolls and nail them to a tree and, like, make a video about it. No one is going to be like, what kind of girl is that? You know what I mean? You're like, I gotcha.
Yeah, we were spooky girls.
I speak that language, you know?
Yeah.
What was your favorite? Did you have, like, a favorite, like, sort of genre, like a favorite horror movie or a, like, these sort of claim for yourself? Like, yep, my favorite movie is blank, or, you know?
Well, I think one of my favorite horror movies that I've watched over and over and over again, and it no longer is scary to me because I've seen it so many times, it's actually a more recent film, Insidious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love Insidious.
Yeah.
But I also love Rosemary's Baby forever. I love this weird 70s movie that Devin showed me when we were kids called Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
It's
creepy.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think my friend Dana was very inspired by, like, that era of
so weird. Of such movies. A weird film. Yeah. And then I just recently saw Hereditary, and that scared
I'm afraid to see that one.
It's spooky.
It bothers me when someone told me that it's, like, when it's emotionally upsettingly spooky. Someone warned me, like, I think you'll be disturbed. And I don't necessarily like to be disturbed.
Yeah.
Scared I can handle. But when it's like,
disturbing.
Oh, you're eating your own child. I know that's not what happens in Red Shirt. But, like, sometimes there are movies where they're scary and you're also like, I'm really uncomfortable with this because it's like hitting some part of me that, like, I feel dirty inside. Or there's some kind of, like,
yeah. Like, every Lars von Trier film I've ever seen makes me feel uncomfortable.
Like, when am I in the mood to feel that? Probably never.
Sometimes when I feel like going to the depths and darkness of my emotions. And
yeah.
Which I do sometimes. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put myself through hell today.
I get that. I think I can get there so easily on my own now. Usually I'm like, can I have some art to pull me somewhat up out of this place? I probably don't need to see Lars von Trier. When did you start getting into that? Like you said, from when you were really little.
When I was really little, it was really Devin that got me into that. I mean, we just watched a lot of spooky films and we just loved it. I mean, we would, you know, play outside and pretend that there were vampire ghosts in the woods that we couldn't see. And just, I don't know, we were weird.
And what, you know, what's interesting about that too, though, is that I see a parallel, and it may not be accurate in your case or in any case, but I had a similar relationship to that kind of stuff, which was like when my other friends would be like, oh, don't turn the lights off. I would be like, no, turn them off.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
let's look into the mirror and say Bloody Mary 3 times.
100%. 100%. And I think the fact that, like, you identify with a sort of type A personality, which I also do, and the fact that you were, like, attracted to kind of punk culture and music, and the fact that you're into, like, spooky stuff when you're little, that is kind of like taking the reins, right? Like,
right.
I don't want to be I would rather be in the dark with the dark thing than be, like, in the light afraid it was going to touch
me.
I would rather be like, you want to do this? Let's do it.
Right.
Like, that's my way of, like,
I agree.
Handling, like, you know what I mean? It's like, I'll be scared.
Yeah.
And then I'll be scary. How about that?
There's an amazing saying that I really love that I think about a lot, you know, because I've experienced a lot of anxiety and I've experienced depression and I'm in therapy and I love it. And I meditate and all this stuff. But, like, there's one saying, I don't know who said it, but, you know, shake hands with your demons. You know, it's an internal thing where I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to run away from it. I'm going to be like, hey, okay, what's up? Like, this is a part of me. Like, let's shake hands, motherfucker. Like,
absolutely.
Hey.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's also, yeah, I'd rather just deal with it and just see what happens.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
macho man to the top rope. The flying elbow, the cover. We've got a new champion.
We're here with Macho Man Randy Savage after his big win to become the new world champion. What are you going to do now, Match?
I'm going to go listen to the newest episode of the Tights and Fights podcast, oh yeah.
Tell us more about this podcast.
It's the podcast of power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, woke discussions, man, and jokes about wrestlers' fashion choices, myself excluded, yeah.
I can't wait to listen.
Neither can I. You can find it Thursdays on Maximum Fun. Oh yeah, dig it.
I play a MASH game. Okay. I don't know if you know what that is.
No.
Mansion, apartment, shack, house.
Okay.
It's a childish game that many of us play. Girls are still playing, as I'm told by my listeners. Mansion, apartment, shack, house. You're going to end up with one of those. And then you're going to end up in our fictitious universe that we're creating together. You're also going to end up with one out of all of these categories that I'm going to ask you. So I'm just going to ask you, like, give me three things that blah, blah, blah. Give me three things, blah, blah, blah. And then the end, there's a very complicated eeny, meeny, miny, moe process.
Cool.
Wherein I'll be like, this is your alternate universe reality. Okay.
Okay.
That's the fastest I've ever explained that. I'm taking a lot of pity.
Great. Go with
it. Listen, I'm behind the wheel. You're in good hands. Let me start with this. Three spooky movies that you can go into and like be in that world and interact in it and like either get the bad guy or become part of the bad guy or girl or like, you know what I mean? It's just like getting that feeling of mystery, of scary. It's, you can jump in and actually kind of be a part of that world as if it's real.
So like if I were to actually live in the world.
Mm-hmm. Or just go in there and experience the world. You don't have to live there. It could just be like, yeah, I jumped into Rosemary's Baby. Like I'm right upstairs at the Dakota.
What's so like weird about that question is I'd never want to be in any of those worlds.
You just want to look.
But you know what? I'm still going to just give you an answer there. Well, I do want to say I love Insidious because I love the idea of like traveling through a dream world.
There you go. See, there's pluses.
Yeah, there's Insidious, pluses, even though, right? I mean, and I love the demon in it that's like listening to Tiny Tim. I think sounds like a fun guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's like sharpening his talons. Let's see. Because I wouldn't want to be in Rosemary's Baby. I wouldn't want to be in Hereditary.
I kind of would because I'm so fascinated by the Dakota in general. And I really like I can pull them apart. It's like I don't necessarily want to be part of that coven or like deal with Mia, you know, having a demon baby. But she does have really cute dresses.
She does have really cute dresses. Can I expand this category?
Absolutely.
To great, because I want to just say Lord of the Rings because I love Lord of the Rings.
Oh, great, sure. Listen, to be honest with you, I usually just say three movies you can jump into,
okay.
But I thought I was being very clever when I made it scary.
The Fifth Element.
I'm glad to know that movie is still beloved by people because
I love it.
It really is something special. It's just an extraordinary, like, there's just not much out there that you can be like, oh, it's like The Fifth Element. It's like, no, The Fifth Element is like
it's
The Fifth Element.
Pretty
That's pretty
amazing.
Much it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, next category. Let's do three places in the world that you would like to have a vacation home if getting there it's like equal across all. Like you can just kind of snap your fingers and be there.
Okay. Cartagena, Colombia.
Great. I'm embarrassed to say that I know where that is because of the movie Romancing the Stone with Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas.
Wow. All right. South of France. No, Greece. I'm going to just go, yeah.
Great.
Like an island. And then somewhere in the Alps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the Alps of Switzerland.
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Okay. Next category. In the MASH game, you end up with a romantic interest. So it could be like somebody that you are attracted to, somebody that you imagine like, this is my alternate universe husband or wife. Or it can be, again, it can be sort of like a character from a movie where you're like, you know, I want to spend a week with this character. Not forever. But in this world, it can be an actor. It can be from any age, any era. It can be a cartoon. Anybody that you have a crush on that you can spend
James
time with in
Dean.
This. Great.
James Dean for sure. Does it have to be romantic?
Yes, in the sense
okay.
that the next category will be like your bud.
Okay.
Same thing, but like somebody that you're just hanging with.
I love Matthew McConaughey.
There we go.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
And Mick Jagger.
Oh, Mick.
I saw them recently. They're all in their 70s, and I'm like, wow.
I've heard they're still rocking it.
They're still hot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mick. I mean, listen, he was a game changer. Okay, next category. But so a buddy, and it can be a fictional person, real person, anything from any era. That's just like, yeah, whenever I want to hang out with Mick or whatever. Probably don't have to say him because you might get him as a sexual interest. I felt so comfortable to say.
Hang out as a bud? Let's see. I mean, because I feel like a lot of people that I like are not like cool bud kind of people. Like, I mean,
I'd
love to
like. Is there anyone that you're inspired by?
I'd be down to like go and have like a fun, crazy time with like, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda.
I mean, I think this is great. This is your game. You don't have to spend the rest of your life hanging out with these people.
Yeah,
just
but I'm like actually immersing myself like for the rest of my life. Whew. That's a hard one.
I like that you're taking this seriously. It honors me.
I feel like I'd also want to hang out with Lou Reed.
Oh, there you go.
Love Lou Reed.
Great.
And I'm just going to put in Audrey Hepburn because I love her.
Oh, God. No kidding.
Yeah.
What a doll.
A doll.
Okay, great. Next category, three foods that in this reality you either feel bad about ecologically eating or you're allergic to them or you would eat as much as you could if you could, but like after a certain point you get sick, like a huge thing of Oreos. In this world, we're removing all of that. Everything is good for you. Everything is fine. You can have all that you want at the snap of a finger. No ramifications. Three.
One of my favorite foods ever is tomato with burrata, like heirloom tomato,
right?
Burrata, olive oil, salt. Basil,
yeah,
little pepper.
It's it's the perfect.
It's
food.
Delicious.
It's a perfect little plate.
Yeah, yeah,
great.
I mean, I just love cheese. So the next one would be like an endless charcuterie plate.
Great,
like meat and cheese. Mm. And lastly, I mean, I'm a pretty healthy girl, and I love like a really good crunchy salad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the way I feel if I eat fries. Like I feel sick. I don't feel like, oh man, I'd love to eat that all the time. No, I love a good flavorful crunchy salad.
I'm putting it in.
Hell yeah.
I like that you made sure to tell me crunchy because I do not care for a limp, soft salad.
Oh, hell no.
That's a bummer.
Some people like wilted
lettuce. What do you see that on a menu? Aren't you like, oh,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
Someone's asking for this.
Someone's
I'm sorry,
kale.
This is too fresh. Could you please limp this up a little bit?
Yeah, like a wilted piece of lettuce.
Yeah.
You know?
That's not a good experience.
No.
Agreed. Okay, next category. Let's do three bands, living or dead, that you can, at the snap of your finger, sort of conjure up almost like a soundtrack to your life. So it's not necessarily music they've even done before because they'll be inspired by your life to kind of keep you company through your day. Three.
Okay. Well, I feel like a dork for mentioning this one, but the Black Lips.
Great.
Because that's who I've been listening to a lot lately.
Not dorky.
No. Broncho. And the Stones.
Great. Okay. Now, let's do three styles from some era, some place in time. It can be like Marie Antoinette era. It can be the 70s. But some style that, again, it may not be comfortable in real life, but in this world, everything feels like the most comfortable thing in the world. So you just get to try it out. There's no judgment. You can be like, yeah, I'm walking down the street wearing like...
Latex.
Great. Give me two more.
I love latex. Maybe like just like fishnets and a short skirt. If I didn't get catcalled and shit.
Right.
Wow. I would love to just like really dress like a dominatrix.
Great.
Yeah. And like maybe like a full... mariachi suit.
Amazing.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful assortment. It's a good potpourri of stuff. Okay, final question is three roles that for whatever reason, like it's already been played, or, you know, you're not a boy and people think that has to be boy. It's three roles that within your life you've come across that you're like, God, I would love to have a shot at that.
Well, there's a, I don't know if this is a role that's already being made or existing, but I would love to play Dolly Parton.
Oh, great.
I can actually see that. Dolly is definitely one of the people I want to be as my friend.
Should we get rid of F. Scott and Zelda?
Yeah. It's going to be Dolly.
Got it.
Hell yeah. Yeah, so I'd love to play Dolly Parton if you're listening.
Love
anyone
it.
Anyone out there who can help me with that. And I love really strong emotional parts. So the question can be either something that hasn't existed yet or something that mm-hmm. has already.
Yeah.
Totally. Oh, well, I want to play Zelda Fitzgerald.
Great.
For sure. I mean, tragedy. Yeah. Love tragedy.
Fantastic.
Forever.
Also, great clothes, my opinion.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's good era.
And if they ever do a remake of, you know, Chicago, I'm Roxy.
Sure.
Gotta use my singing chops.
Absolutely. Okay. Give me a number between 1 and 7.
6.
Okay. I'm going to pause this.
All right.
It's going to take very little time. When I come back, I'm going to give you your 100% guaranteed fictitious
all right.
MASH
I'm excited.
Future.
Hell yeah.
All right.
All right.
I feel real good about this. First of all, I don't know if you're going to be hanging out with this demon that's listening to Tiny Tim, but I do give you the opportunity to jump into Insidious if you want.
Great.
I also just love Vera Farmiga. I would love to be her buddy. I hope she's wonderful.
Yeah.
So that gives you access to her. And my pal Lynn Shay is in that movie, and she is wonderful. So
oh, cool.
Listen, it's not a bad thing.
I feel like I would just learn how to like be friends with the demon. Maybe we could date a little, see how that works
this
out.
This is what I'm talking about. You're taking the reins.
I'm
taking
down.
It back.
Yeah,
I
I'm
love
down.
It. Maybe you want to take that demon to your mansion in Cartagena.
Wow. Because I sell cocaine on the side.
I know. Like, what is the immediate thought of like mansion in Colombia? Interesting. Interesting.
With a demon boyfriend.
Yeah. Let me tell you what else. You are so feared in Cartagena that you could walk around in your full-on mariachi outfit and everyone is like, yeah, you're amazing. You're a fucking badass. You go. I'm very excited about that. I want you to rest assured that you will have unlimited crunchy salads.
Oh, my God.
Not a wilt in sight. Not a chance. You have a sort of life soundtrack that is scored by none other than the Black Lips.
Oh my God.
So
no.
Well done you. Well done you. I want to congratulate you on your steamy romance with James Dean.
Oh God, thank God.
Thank God you got him. He's back and better than ever. And let me tell you something else.
And
this
he's a younger
feels,
man, you know?
That's right. Oh, God, that's so true. Wow. Mm-hmm. That shocks me.
Yeah.
The people that have passed that were long gone but when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And to think like, oh, now I'm older. Than Like, now
I'm
they
older.
Would be a younger
yeah.
man.
Hey, I'm down.
Kind of, that's amazing. That's a strange moment. Okay. But yeah, totally down. Okay, so you have doubled down. Now, this is why this makes sense to me. Who better, okay, to play Dolly Parton than Dolly Parton's best friend, you. You got her?
Oh, hell
and
yeah.
And you're going to play her.
Great.
And like, there's, that, I mean, please. You're going to be like, yeah.
So
I'm
we're going to be friends and I'm going to play her? Oh,
yeah,
my God.
So you're going to be even more equipped
this
to
is,
capture
honestly,
her essence.
This is something that I want to, what's the term?
You're sort of like manifest. Putting it out. Yeah, manifest.
I want to manifest this. This sounds like a dream.
I will tell you, the least likely is James Dean.
Right. Well, maybe there's going to be
but
technology
this business
in
with
the future.
Dolly, I'm ready, willing, and able to believe that that could happen.
I am putting it out there into the universe.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Rebecca, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you.
Where can people find you? Anything you want to tell them about, etc.?
Yeah, well... At the Rebecca Knox is my handle for Instagram as well as Twitter. I don't really use Twitter very much, but you know, once in a while I do, and you might laugh. See?
It's good selling. Yeah, it's good selling point. Yeah.
There you go. That's, yeah.
Great. Follow this beautiful woman on Instagram. You won't be sorry. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm talking to a computer as if they're people. Guys, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.